You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Pip, and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast. Part of my mission in ensuring your pregnancy, birth, and motherhood journeys are supported, positive, and empowering. Are you ready? Let's get chatting. Hello, I'm Pip, and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth, and beyond. Remember, as a podcast listener, you can get 15% off all my online courses at midwifepip.com using the code PODCAST15. One of the beauties of breastfeeding is the lack of preparation and organisation needed. Your boobs are attached to you all of the time, and you have the perfect amount of ideal temperature milk on tap. Yet for many women, the idea of breastfeeding in public causes so much anxiety and worry. This week, I'm joined by the wonderful Danielle, better known as the breastfeeding mentor on social media. Danielle is a breastfeeding educator and author on a mission to help you feel supported on your breastfeeding journey and to bust the many breastfeeding myths that exist. So welcome, Danielle, and thank you so much for coming to join me.
Hi, Pip. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited because, as we were saying before we kind of came on live, is that we connected literally like days ago on Instagram. And then as mums, being the working mums that we are and navigating our own breastfeeding lives, we've like 2 days later pulled out the bag and here we are chatting, which I love. This is one of the best things about social media.
It is. It really is.
So yeah, thank you so much for carving out time, because I was thinking, Danielle, like another breastfeeding topic that I really wanted to get into this season. And the questions I get all the time about breastfeeding in public and how to navigate it and what are the rules and how to feel more confident. And actually, I was at a baby group last week, and there was a mum there who was a breastfeeding mum, but always pumps to take a bottle when she's out and about. And I was like, because she's worried about breastfeeding and what other people think, not about, you know, her own ability. And I thought, I mean, this is a podcast, but everything I can see in your face now completely describes how I felt, because pumping is really hard work, isn't it? That preparation, that cleaning, sterilizing the bottles. The beauty to me of breastfeeding is the fact that you can just leave the house. So actually to remove that, then I think makes a massive barrier to feeding. Are your thoughts, because I can see it all over your face.
My goodness. how completely heartbreaking it is that in 2022 any mother should feel the need to make extra work for herself to potentially buy, you know, quite an expensive additional gadget just to make other people feel more comfortable when she's doing the most natural thing in the history of humanity. Wow, that is heartbreaking, really, really sad. But it reminds me of a viral post that I saw this morning, which honestly, when you see it and hear about it, I'm certain that your blood will boil too. And it was of a pastor in America shaming a woman for breastfeeding her baby on the front row of the audience in church. and describing how she said that, oh, you know, I was covered up, so it shouldn't be an issue. But he said, well, even when you're covered up, it looks like you're giving birth to an alien. Bizarre, really childish, strange comment. And I just thought, my goodness, imagine if you were that woman. Imagine how embarrassed you would feel being told that, yeah, this beautiful natural practice was somehow, yeah, shameful and something to be embarrassed about. I was absolutely mortified. So I'm not surprised that some people, you know, some parents do feel the need to express, to feed their babies in public. But yowzers, we really need to be asking ourselves questions as a society if that's what we are making some mothers do, make extra work for themselves at a time when they are probably completely exhausted, when actually they need all the rest and sleep that they can get, and they don't need to be spending additional time preparing bottles when they don't actually need to. Mm. My goodness.
And I think it's different, isn't it? If that's what you want to do, that's fine. But if you're doing it because of other people, that's, I think, where it becomes an issue and really sad. And like you say, you know, it's a massive amount of extra work and preparation and faff if it's not what you want to do. Mm. And that could definitely stop you then going out the house and going to these things if you feel like you've got to put that in place first. Becomes a bit of a challenge and barrier to life, really.
Absolutely. And I would wonder how many people and how many listeners are aware that in the UK, certainly in the UK, in Canada, Ireland, Australia, and Taiwan, breastfeeding in public with or without a cover is protected by law. And so, you know, anyone who did have the audacity to make a comment or to ask you to move would be breaking the law, actually, and certainly in the UK, that, you know, they could be prosecuted for that. Women are protected, breastfeeding mothers and parents protected, because it matters so much, and because, well, some governments at least acknowledge that for some people, breast milk is the best option. And if it is, we should be doing everything we can to facilitate that journey.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really, really powerful point, actually. So for anyone listening who is thinking, oh my gosh, how do I navigate this? What am I allowed to do, right? Where am I allowed to breastfeed? Because that's something I hear all the time. And as you've beautifully just said, Danielle, it is by law that you can breastfeed in any public place. And am I right in thinking as well, any age child? So it's not like just an under 1 year old or an under 2 year old. It's any age, anywhere you want to.
There's no upper age limit, and breastfeeding is exempt from public indecency laws as well in those particular countries. In the US, it is only in 31 states, not all 50. So there's some protection there, but it's not quite the same. Mm. But certainly in the UK, anywhere, anytime, however old your child is, you know, the law is on your side. The law protects you as a nursing mother. And I think it's really empowering to know that, actually. And there was another lady recently in the news that perhaps you heard about it, who was asked to stop nursing her newborn. I think the baby was around 4 weeks old on the car park of a Sainsbury's supermarket by an employee. Can you imagine that? She was in her car just trying to get her baby to settle down, and an employee had the nerve to knock on her window and ask her to move and leave or stop what she was doing.
Wow. And we've all horrendous. Been there with a newborn, haven't we? Like trying to fundle around in the car with the restriction of your seat, trying to get them to feed and stop crying. And it's so stressful to have someone speak to you like that is, there's just no words, is there? There's just no words.
I just feel like it speaks so much to the way that women are viewed still in society, and how the fact that anyone thinks they have the right to tell any other individual what they can or cannot do with their body. Mm. My goodness, why do you think that's okay? Because I certainly don't. And yeah, I think I hope it's something that will die out with, you know, newer generations, and as we, you know, become more accepting and tolerant of one another. but just the fact that anyone thinks that it's okay to dictate what any woman does with her breasts, my goodness.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's striking.
Not okay. And I think the more it's seen, the more breastfeeding public is seen, the more normal it becomes, doesn't it? I think we have come a long way, but there's got to still be work to be done, because the kind of comments that you and I get and see and receive shows that there is still work to be done. There are still women that are nervous about this. And therefore, perhaps it is a barrier to breastfeeding, or perhaps they stop sooner than they wanted to because they think, well, I can't leave the house if I'm breastfeeding. When actually, it makes it easier, I think, often to leave the house when you are breastfeeding. So I think...
Undoubtedly. Yeah, I have a friend, actually, who whose mum told her while she was expecting that she really shouldn't breastfeed because her own sister did. This was back in the 80s. And was so limited and couldn't leave the house easily because she had to at times sit there for hours feeding her baby before she could leave. I just thought, my goodness, what a thing to say to an expectant mum who, you know, may be desperate to breastfeed, but because of, some people's expectations, thinks that she can't and that she couldn't. Really sad.
So in
reality,
sad.
It's rarely noticed. And the vast majority of the time, you know, you can just do it discreetly if you want to, and no one bats an eyelid. But when we hear high profile cases like the examples we've talked about, and hear horror stories in mums groups and so on, those are the stories that stick with you. And as an expectant mom, they would certainly leave me worrying about whether I could or couldn't breastfeed whenever and wherever I needed to.
Definitely. And I love what you say about the discreetness. So many times when I've been breastfeeding, I say little Finley, he's not little anymore, he's huge. But when I've been breastfeeding him out and about everywhere, and people will come over and say, oh, go to look at the baby. And then I'm like, oh, he's actually feeding. Because they didn't even know. They just assume they're being cuddled.
Aww.
Because actually, once they're on the breast, there's absolutely nothing to see anyway, is there?
Indeed.
I don't, you know. So we need to stop worrying about other people, I think. Danielle, can I take you back to the beginning? And what has led you, because you are clearly hugely passionate about breastfeeding and supporting women, what led you to that passion? I would love to hear your story.
I think it's about the way that I became a mother. And the first time I was pregnant, it was 2014. I was living halfway around the world in Abu Dhabi. I was married at the time, and we just announced to all of our friends and family that I was pregnant. We just passed the 12-week mark, and then the following day I miscarried the baby.
Oh, and sorry to hear that.
I mean, anyone who knows anything about baby loss, and I mean, you can imagine if you haven't experienced it, that it's just the most gut-wrenching and heartbreaking time. And shortly after that, I found that I was separated and divorced and kind of questioning everything about my life, my career. I was teaching at the time, and it threw me into a bit of a downward spiral, really. And I used that time to go and train as a yoga teacher and meditation teacher in India, which was incredible. I thought about leaving teaching briefly, and I was fortunate to be able to do a master's degree in psychology, which, again, I loved. It was so nice to learn more about myself and, you know, the depression that I'd fallen into, the grief I'd experienced, and so many of the children that I've worked with, I just felt like I had a better understanding of completing the course, and I loved studying again. And so when I did come back to teaching in the end and returned to the UK in 2017, and that's when I moved in with my now fiance. And
congratulations.
Thank you. The following year we were engaged and then pregnant, and pregnancy was pretty smooth for me. I had lots of sickness during the first trimester, but you know, it wasn't unmanageable. I generally enjoyed being pregnant, and actually, when I went into labour, I was excited more than anything, which sounds maybe a bit silly, but I think I just wanted to be a mum for so long and felt, I couldn't wait to meet my son. My labour was Not quite as I imagined. And it actually was, it was 78 hours in the end.
Oh, wow, proper endurance event.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it was a lot. It was intense. And it definitely, it ended in me having an emergency section when I had envisaged myself omming my baby out in the room filled with aromatherapy and in a water birth. And that didn't happen. And so for me, breastfeeding then became even more important because I felt like I felt like I had something to prove, which I know I didn't. But at the time, I felt like I desperately wanted to feel some sense of control over my motherhood, to have some kind of ownership over it, because I felt that I felt like I'd lost a part of that when I lost a baby all those years ago. And then when my labour felt like a disaster. I mean, my son arrived safe and sound, and you know, people say that that's all that matters, but actually it was very traumatic. And so for me, breastfeeding became, it felt like the one role as a mother that I could do and that I wanted to do and was thankfully able to do. And so very quickly it became very empowering for me. And seeing my boy grow, we had a bit of a scare when he was 3 days old and he was weighed a little bit earlier than he should have been. And the doctor said that he'd lost 8% of his body weight. And as a new mum, and you know, hearing that, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm not feeding him enough. There's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with my milk. And yeah, went into a bit of a panic. And actually he was absolutely fine. He'd just been weighed a little bit too soon. And so I think over the next few months, as I saw him gaining weight and we bonded, and it was just such a lovely journey. It became more and more important to me. And I found that as I was thinking about returning to work and I was struggling with sleep deprivation, I didn't know where to turn for reliable, evidence-based advice that would help me navigate this new life as a nursing mom. And I very much felt, my own GP told me when I went to see her that if I was struggling with sleep deprivation, I should just go away for the weekend, leave my son. And when I came back, he'd be so angry with me at 8 months old that he wouldn't want to nurse again. I was floored by that. I know, horrendous advice. I thought, what? Really?
And how traumatic and damaging for everyone involved. Do you know what I mean? Like, for everyone, that's an awful situation.
Exactly. And yeah, that was what she had done. And so that's what she was recommending that I do. Obviously, I didn't do that. I was horrified by
it. I wonder where the evidence base is for that advice.
Indeed. Yeah, none whatsoever. And that experience with medical professionals, heartbreakingly, and I'm sure you experience it too at work, hearing from so many different GPs, health visitors, midwives, hearing different things and different advice. And again, I hear this from mothers all over the world. Actually, some medical professionals are giving really terrible advice for prolonging or maintaining or even stopping your breastfeeding journey. And so I started to do my own research, and I was able to use the skills that I'd learned studying just before I had my son. I put those skills to use to find reliable data that I could trust, because I learned very quickly that there was a lot of hearsay and there were lots of old wives' tales, and that unfortunately, even from medical professionals, much of the advice that I was given was anecdotal and wasn't founded in anything. So that's what drove me to start doing my own research and sharing the things that I learned. And then very quickly I learned that lots of other mothers and parents around the world felt exactly the same and had the similar questions and concerns and fears that I did, and wanted to connect and discuss the sources of evidence that I'd found. So that was 2 years ago now. Just recently, and the Breastfeeding Mentor now has over 70,000 followers on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And that to me is just so incredibly uplifting and reassuring for anyone who feels alone we're not at all. There are at least tens of thousands of us around the world, so we're never alone. Even if, you know, we might be living in a society that doesn't particularly support breastfeeding.
Yeah, I love that. And you should be so, so proud, Jan, now, genuinely, of the work that you've done to support women, because it can feel like an exceptionally lonely time, a really lonely time. So actually, like you say, to know that, my goodness, there are tens of thousands, if not millions, of women going through that exact same feeling, but we need to talk about it and express it. Otherwise, we're going to continue to feel alone in our kind of concerns about breastfeeding. And really interesting that advice that you share, and the importance actually of us looking at evidence-based information and not just sort of doing what our best friend did, because we're all so unique and it's great if that worked for them, but that might not work for you, you know, and one way doesn't always fit everyone. I think it's really interesting because, like you say, we are totally aware of the benefits of breastfeeding, and loads of women go into pregnancy knowing that they want to breastfeed, which is fantastic. And for those that don't, that's obviously also absolutely fine when they've made that nice informed choice to what's right for them. But I just don't think we are set up as society, as a national health service, to support women. We invest all this money in telling women how great it is and how we should do it and all these benefits for mum and baby, but actually there's no support to physically and practically get women off to a good start breastfeeding. And I really feel for my community colleagues. This is not me bashing community midwifery at all. They are absolutely doing their best, but we're in a service that is stretched to like the finest threads. I'm lucky in an aspect, I work on labour wards, so we have some like acute time in those early hours to try and get that first feed off to a good start. But then often, you know, women are left. I was at home sort of 4 or 5 hours after Finley was born thinking, oh my goodness, what do I do? Like, it's so different when it's you and your own baby. And that postnatal support just isn't there, is it? It just isn't good enough. Just a quick pause to remind you that you are your birth boss. Often women are concerned about feeling out of control during labour, but it's your body and your baby, meaning the final say and control is always firmly in your hands. For more expert information ahead of your birth, sign up to apticlub.co.uk.
Not at all. It's really sad. And I think if we look at the way that other countries and cultures treat new mothers, there's so much that we could learn. And it's just so sad that women are bashed over the head with this trope of breast is best. You know, everyone talks about it. And the fact that I think is it 83% of mothers start breastfeeding? I forget off the top of my head. But that 80% of mothers also stop breastfeeding before they want to. That's heartbreaking, and just shows us that, like you said, there is a serious lack of support. And I think that's because of the absence of generational and cultural wisdom surrounding the whole postpartum period. And the fact that, you know, we're not surrounded by, or I certainly wasn't surrounded by, other mothers who had some or any breastfeeding experience at all, you know, that then you may not have friends, siblings, aunts, uncles, not uncles, aunts and, you know, mothers, grandparents perhaps, who can just offer you that real life practical advice. So, and I'm sure you get similar questions too. I get, my inbox is inundated with mothers, new mothers, particularly all over the world, who are struggling with their latch. And I can offer guidance and I can direct them to, there's a really great app called Latch Aid, which has lovely videos. It's completely free, and talks you through getting a really good, deep, comfortable latch. But the fact that these mothers are reaching out to, you know, a stranger on social media for advice to feed their baby. I mean, gosh, why is there no better support than that? Why aren't there systems in place? And women are just left to it. New mothers and parents are just left to get on with it. And yes, breastfeeding is natural, of course it is, However, it's not easy by any means. And I don't think I've met a mother yet whose baby just latched on miraculously and there weren't any issues. There was no pain. Their flow was great. And, you know, they didn't have any concerns at all. Every mother today that I've spoken to had some questions or concerns or some pain or some issues with their baby gaining weight. And actually, if there was more hands-on in-person support, just with that initial latch, you know, even if that's what we focused on, it would make such a huge difference. And also if there were more breastfeeding parents and mothers, there would be more that was understood about breastfeeding. And we wouldn't have the same expectations of breastfed babies that we do often of formula fed babies. And I was fed formula and so were my little sisters. It was just something that my mom did because she genuinely thought it was just the best thing for our family. And it is so sad that she now, 6 years later, really regrets not having more support and not being encouraged to breastfeed back then. And the fact that, yeah, a woman in her 60s still has such, you know, powerful emotive response to feeling like she let her children down when actually society that let her down. And, you know, if she, with my sister, certainly she wanted to try breastfeeding, but because they were twins, every doctor and medical professional she spoke to said, oh no, don't bother to do that, it would be too hard. And yeah, I think it's really sad that she in particular was robbed of that experience because there wasn't more support. I would hope that there, you know, that advice wouldn't be given today, but we are still very far from where we should be. And I know that the last infant feeding survey wasn't recent and it was in 2010, but at that point, only 1% of babies in the UK were exclusively breastfed to 6 months old. And when that's the recognised, you know, recommended standard, we need to be doing more to help mothers get to that point, surely. 1%, good grief. It's horrendous.
Shocking, isn't it?
Really sad.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I wasn't actually aware of that until I was looking up some statistics for World Breastfeeding Week. And that's when I came across that. And I was like, wow. Yeah, wow, that's as well.
Really
interesting
sad.
What you said about your own mother, Danielle, because my mum actually says exactly the same.
Really?
In that she started trying to breastfeed both myself and my brother. But stopped quite quickly because, and this is one of the things I hear all the time that saddens me beyond anything else, is I didn't have enough milk.
Oh.
I didn't have enough. And I hear this all the time. And the reality is what you didn't have enough of was support, not milk.
Yes.
The women that actually do not physically produce enough milk is so, so rare. And usually there are underlying the medical conditions that they may have had, or they've had significant breast surgery that's removed some of the breast tissue. And these are things that generally actually we can identify in pregnancy. But we hear that all the time. I think that's probably the most common reason I hear for stopping breastfeeding. So to anyone listening who is kind of trying to breastfeed and struggling and thinking, oh, I just don't have enough milk, I'm going to need to supplement, please speak to a lactation consultant if that's accessible, or your health visitor or your midwife, because the chances are it's not that you haven't got enough milk. It may be you need some more support, or it may actually be that your baby's behavior is completely normal newborn behavior. But if you don't know that's normal, then you assume they're hungry. And I'm talking about cluster feeding here, and you and I know very well that cluster feeding is like 360 degree all the time, around the clock, feeding. And when you know that's normal, that's fine. But if you don't know that's normal, you assume your baby's hungry, and no mum wants a baby to be hungry. And I remember, and I've spoken about this quite a bit, that I remember saying to my husband on night sort of 3 or 4, if I wasn't the midwife, I'd have stopped breastfeeding tonight. because I absolutely would have fallen into that camp of I haven't got enough milk.
Yes.
And I think that's a kind of, it's almost become a social norm, isn't it? Oh, I tried to breastfeed, but I couldn't because I didn't have enough milk.
Mm, it really has. And I think if you go to any baby group, gosh, I've been to countless ones, and start talking about breastfeeding, you very quickly come across someone who says exactly that. I remember very clearly in, gosh, the first few months of my son's life, meeting another lady whose little girl was the same age as my boy, and you know, she talked about how she tried desperately to breastfeed, but she just couldn't. And I said, oh gosh, you know, what was it? And I was just trying to understand. My understanding of breastfeeding was, yeah, way more limited than it is now. But I just, you know, I wanted to hear her story. And she said, oh, she was just on me all the time. And I said, oh right, yes. And she said, no, she was just on me all the time. And I said, well, yeah, yes, I'm, so is my son. Yes, yeah. I was trying, I just, and so what was the issue? And the fact that she then thought that meant she didn't have enough milk. And I had no concept of cluster feeding, meant that she'd stopped breastfeeding prematurely. And even then, just a few months after her daughter's birth, you know, was already feeling guilty about it. And I just thought, my goodness, if only you'd had, I don't know, a mom, a sister, a friend, a health professional there to tell you this is completely normal. You know, these are the things to look out for. You know, if your baby's not producing enough wet nappies and they're not gaining weight at a steady rate, then be worried. Don't be concerned if they're cluster feeding for hours at a time. They're just trying to boost your supply. Completely normal. I just thought, wow, how sad. And I wonder how many mums experience that even now, particularly in the UK. Yeah, I think it's probably loads actually. And we need to do something about that. It's not fair. And when we're failing mums and we're failing children, if we don't allow them to make that decision, like you said, if you don't want to breastfeed, brilliant, don't. Have that choice, make that informed decision. But if you do want to breastfeed, why are we not supporting mothers and parents to do that? When we are fully aware of the, you know, there are profound societal and health benefits. And I was gobsmacked when I heard some of the benefits for mothers as well. So, I mean, the benefits for infants are generally, you know, pretty widely known, and I know some of them aren't conclusive. But certainly the reduction in childhood obesity, and the reduction in ear infections and occurrences of diarrhea in infants as well. You know, lots of the benefits for infants are widely known. But I had no idea until I think it was around this time last year, actually, that for every year that a mother breastfeeds, her risk of breast cancer and ovarian cancer, heart disease, stroke and hypertension reduced. I had no idea about these things. I thought, my goodness. So actually, there are really profound, significant health benefits for mothers and children. So if we are not facilitating that lactation journey for parents, we are robbing parents of those benefits. Oh, gosh, we, you know, and even if you don't care about individuals' health and well-being, which, you know, fair enough, if you don't, you don't. Then from a purely financial perspective, it's estimated that even I think the wording is something like a marginal increase in breastfeeding would save the NHS £40 million a year. So even if all you care about is the economics, it's worth, you know, investing just a little bit more in lactation education. It would make a real difference. And yeah, on an individual level, it would, you know, it would really, it could shape a parent's nursing journey.
And I think that education is such a key point, Danielle. And I think that education needs to happen before we start breastfeeding. So yes, ideally in that sort of later stages of pregnancy, because once you're there, your hormones are all over the shop and it is difficult. We need that knowledge to already be in place and that realistic understanding and expectations. Because I think often women think if the baby hasn't just crawled up to the breast and latched on and it's pain-free and they're happy and content, then, you know, it's not worked. And actually the reality is, for I think probably 99.9% of women, there are some challenges and some hurdles to overcome. And we need to just normalize that and make sure that support's in place. And I think that's where, as society, we really are letting families down. Now, when it comes to embracing breastfeeding out of your home, so going to cafes, to restaurants, to, in my case, the side of a rugby pitch most Saturday afternoons, what is your advice to women, Danielle, about doing that with confidence and to feel comfortable doing so as well?
Well, thankfully, I think there are lots of things that you can do. And firstly, knowing that you are protected by law, I think, is incredibly empowering. Secondly, thinking about what you're wearing. So some mothers are very happy. I when my son was younger, I was very happy to just whip a boob out wherever, whenever, because I was just so desperate to calm him down and have that sense of calm myself. And I felt very frantic when he was, you know, trying to get at the breast and I couldn't get through layers of clothes and whatever. So I would just very happily flop one out whenever, wherever. But actually, as my son's gotten a little bit older, and in different situations, I'm not so comfortable with having my whole breast out in front of, you know, maybe a room of strangers or family and friends. And so finding breastfeeding clothing, and thankfully nowadays there are so many options. It's really, really wonderful. There are, you know, options with zips and flaps and buttons and all sorts, and, you know, hidden, you know, tucked away little secret access points where you can discreetly nurse your little one anywhere, anytime, without anyone seeing any part of you, which is great. So,
and whilst feeling really confident in your postnatal body, which
exactly, and, you know, feeling like yourself as well. And that's really important. So if you can, then I highly recommend investing in a few breastfeeding pieces that you genuinely like, because there's no reason why you can't wear them afterwards, or, you know, perhaps for future pregnancies if you plan on having more children. And, you know, if you're on a tight budget, there are lots of secondhand and, you know, barely used groups and options available on social media and things like that, and apps like Vinted and so on, where you can get bargains. Because for, yeah, certainly in the UK, many women don't breastfeed for very long, and so lots of really good quality nursing clothes available at a steal. So invest in clothes that you feel comfortable wearing. You know, if you really can't, then the one up, one down method is fabulous. And so wearing a vest top or perhaps a crop top under your outfit and then lifting your top to nurse your baby is a great way to feed discreetly, if that's what you want to do. So yes, thinking about the clothes that you're wearing, and if possible, if at all possible, surrounding yourself and having conversations with other breastfeeding mums, because when we know that we're not alone in our experiences, we can feel much more confident about our choices. And it is difficult to, certainly if, you know, if you don't have much experience of speaking to other breastfeeding parents and mothers, it can be incredibly isolating. And if everyone else at the baby group has made the switch to a bottle, you know, it can be difficult to feel confident then nursing in that space. But, you know, in that case, even if the only other breastfeeding mothers that you have conversation with are online, have those conversations, because, yeah, it's incredibly empowering to know that you're not alone, and, you know, you're not going through any challenges by yourself. And then my last tip is to just focus on your little one, because they are the only ones that we breastfeed for. And so, quite frankly, everyone else's opinion is irrelevant. So get comfortable wherever you are. Take a few deep breaths if you're feeling nervous. And if you're ready to maybe cry some happy tears, count your little one's fingers and toes with each inhalation and exhalation. And just focus on them. Nothing to do with anyone else. And quite frankly, your breast milk will do way more for your child than anyone's opinion ever will. Hold on to that.
Love that.
Focus on your little one.
That's a lovely, powerful message. I absolutely love that, Danielle. Adored your advice there. Love it. One of the things I just wanted to talk about, because I think For me, probably pre-motherhood, sort of unpregnant Pip, when I thought of nursing clothing, I definitely did envisage like really frumpy clothes that I probably wouldn't have wanted to wear.
Yes.
And when I found myself pregnant and planning for breastfeeding, I was like, wow, this is a whole nother world. Even clothes that perhaps aren't designed specifically for nursing, the amount of conferences and things or talks that I've gone to where I've had Finley with me. So I've had like button down shirt dresses or wrap dresses that I will wear for years and years and years that are perfect for breastfeeding. So actually there are great ways. And like you say, because you're not just buying them for breastfeeding, you can wear them forever and pregnancy, and it's a sustainable investment. And doesn't need to be like this just 6 month or 12 month capsule wardrobe, actually. Yes. Wear them for a long time, which I absolutely love. And it's quite, your body changes, I think, as well when you've had a baby. So it's nice to re-find what works for you and what you feel comfortable in, which is really lovely.
Yes, that's a really good point.
The other thing I wanted to mention based on your awesome tips was when you are the only one perhaps in a group of mums or friends breastfeeding, I always found it, and maybe this is also my midwife head coming into it, but I used to think, I know that we need to show breastfeeding more, to normalize it more, to help support other women. So if I'm not just, if it doesn't feel strong enough to do this for me and my baby, actually I'm also doing it for all those other women that need this to be normalized. So if your head kind of works in that way, sometimes it's nice to think, do you know what, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to breastfeed in front of all these strangers. And I'm not just doing it for me and my baby, but I'm doing it for those thousands of other women that also need this to be normalized and need the support and to be able to feel confident.
I love that. Oh.
Because it might be, you know, that one mum that's frantically pumping in the morning to be able to get out of the house rather than breastfeeding actually sees you sat in that cafe and thinks, actually, no, I'm going to do that. I can do that too. And absolutely. I think we owe it to each other as a community of breastfeeding mums as well to be there for each other and cheerlead each other as well.
Yes, that's the thing, isn't it? That what the saying is that, you know, the more breastfeeding is seen, the less it will be noticed. And
we'll
simply, hopefully one day, just blend into the fabric of life, because that's what it is. You know, it's not an extraordinary event. It's just part of parenthood.
Yeah, definitely. And Daya, one last question, I promise, before I let you get
No, that's fine. I could talk about breastfeeding forever. So
I know, we'll be here all day. But get the babies all awake up. We'll bring them all in. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
I just wonder, because I haven't, whether you have ever personally been faced with any negativity in public when you've been breastfeeding.
The only negativity I faced is like sort of looks, muttered comments, nothing directly to me, and perhaps someone who is in the distance or something like that. And it's a good job, really, because quite frankly I would unleash everything that I know about my breastfeeding rights on them. But no, I've fortunately, and even as my son is now, he's three now, and I nurse him in public all the time, I've not experienced any direct criticism or anything like that, but I have had a few looks and seen people sort of muttering and looking over at me in the distance, which, you know, certainly if I was a new mum, I might be put off by that. But yeah, I'm breastfeeding crazy, so it's not going to put me off. And at this point, if anything, it just motivates me more to do everything that I possibly can to make this normal and, yeah, just accepted. It's not remarkable, it's just, it's part of who we are, and it's fine. It's more than fine. It's amazing, actually.
It is incredible, like amazing that our bodies have allowed these babies to grow. Actually completely blows my mind how incredible we are. I just wonder, with those negative sort of side glances or mutterings, have you noticed that more since your little boy's been bigger and older?
That's a good point.
I feel like we are becoming better as society at normalizing seeing a tiny baby feed, but I think the social stigma of an older child or bigger baby, I think that is probably as strong as ever.
The comment started as soon as my boy was probably around maybe about 9 months old, I'm gonna say. Lots of people asking, friends, families, perfect strangers, oh, when are you going to start breastfeeding? And when when I would be honest and say, actually, I'd really love to get to the World Health Organization recommendation of 2 years, you know, I'd love to be able to do that. People were aghast and horrified and shocked. And one friend called me a really rare woman for wanting to do that. I thought, what bizarre thing to say.
Yeah. I would sure that's that rare. Actually. I feel like rare is good. Thanks, yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, it's definitely still really stigmatized. Another family member actually made a comment and they thought it was hilarious about and compared me to what's her name? I can't remember the name of the character from Game of Thrones who nurses her 8 year old son. Yeah.
Okay.
It's grim. But he's like this really weedy, feeble child who's 8 years old and due to take over the kingdom, but he's still at his mother's breast.
Okay.
I mean, it's a ridiculous depiction of nursing. But yeah, this relative made a comment about that. And I just thought, really? Is that really how you see my then 2 year old?
Yeah.
But yeah, again, it just spurs me on to share the facts and do everything that I possibly can to normalize nursing beyond infancy. Because yeah, I mean, if we zoom out of the UK, there's, depending on the study that you look at, between 45% and 55% of 2 year olds receive breast milk. So actually more than half. Nothing unusual about that. It's not weird. It's the norm in the majority of the world. So actually it's us that's a little bit unusual. And yeah, hopefully with a bit of time and education, that will change. We'll see.
Yeah, I feel like we all need a little Danielle on our shoulder when we're like breastfeeding or having these worries. And the reason I asked you that actually, Danielle, was because I feel like I'm in that or just in that time now, just sort of tiptoeing into it. So Finley, my little boy's 11 months, but he's really big. So he does look a lot older than 11 months. He's absolutely massive. Not quite sure what happened. I think I make clotted cream as opposed to milk because he just got massive. But because of that, I think I'm starting to notice, like you said, those little glances. I mean, if anyone wants to say anything, they would be incredibly brave. But I kind of noticed that. And I've had those comments as well from friends and family, when are you going to stop? And I'm like, I actually have no idea because I don't enjoy expressing and pumping. I find it a faff. I just don't enjoy it. I have to do it when I'm returning to work, but I don't enjoy it. So I don't want that to be my primary way to feed because I just find it stressful and it takes up twice the amount of time and doesn't take a bottle. So I don't know is my honest answer to when everyone asks me and they're like, oh, but you know, he can move on to cow's milk when he's one. And I'm like, yeah, he can, but I don't know if I want him to just yet or not to use that full time. And so I feel like I'm having to answer these questions at the moment, which is why I was interested as to your experience of that later on breastfeeding. Cause I do think the social stigma is strong with older babies, for sure.
It really is. And yes, cow's milk is recommended from 12 months and beyond, but that's not necessarily to replace breast milk completely. And I don't think there's any cow's milk yet that, you know, contains cancer-killing cells and antibodies that are tailored to my son's environment and that will continue to adjust. I was mind blown when I read a study that found that up to the age of 48 months, so 4 years old, breast milk continues to adapt. And that for older children, it has, I think, I might have these statistics mixed up, but I think it's twice as much fat and 50% more protein than it does for a child who's in their first year of life. That to me is incredible. And yeah, it just shows me that our bodies continue to adapt to our children for as long as, you know, it's mutually beneficial. And I really feel that it's sad that we don't just trust parents to make that decision. We're all different. Every baby is different, every toddler is different, every preschooler is different, and they are all going to grow up at some point. I don't know if people are worried that they won't, but you know, every child in the history of the world has weaned at some point.
Yeah.
So how about we just trust them to do that?
And the thing the power that I love about breastfeeding, certainly just personally at the moment, above the nutrition, which obviously I love, but the thing I love the most, I think, is if Finley's unwell, so at the moment he's teething, the best comfort ever. So I just think how amazing that within 5 minutes I've gone from a child that's uncomfortable and fractious and unhappy to being calm and content and happy to go on and play again. I just think, amazing. Why would I want to take that away or stop that? That's totally working for our family.
Indeed. And it's so powerful that you hit the terrible twos or the terrific twos, whichever way you want to look at it. And
terribly terrific.
Yeah, indeed. It's such a powerful tool for calming tantrums, for, again, when they're sick, when they're teething. It's so reassuring to know that they're getting this ideal food, even when, you know, they might not have an appetite and they just want to be cuddled. And the fact that breast milk contains pain relief as well, I love knowing that.
Yeah.
So nice. And it really is such a wonderful mothering tool. Mm. And if we can only separate the way women's bodies are so hypersexualized and, you know, appreciate that actually this is what breasts are for, that's okay. Mm. It's fine. Yeah.
Oh, we're amazing, aren't we? Aren't we just
amazing? We are. We're awesome.
Oh, Danielle, thank you so much for taking the time to come and share your incredible words of wisdom and support for us. And to anyone out there who is nervous or anxious about breastfeeding in public, please just imagine you've got Danielle holding your hand, because I'm sure that will be a huge sense of confidence for you. So a big thank you for you and all the incredible work you're doing.
Thank you, Pip. I really appreciate it. Thank you for facilitating this conversation and spreading the good word.
Oh, it's been fantastic. Thank you for tuning in today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I'd be hugely grateful if you could take a moment to leave a quick review. It honestly means the world to me to hear from you as a listener. And of course, to ensure you don't miss upcoming episodes, hit subscribe too. Remember, I'm here to support you through pregnancy, birth, and beyond, through my range of pregnancy, birth prep, and postpartum courses at midwifepip.com. I hope to get to know you better and to help you on your empowering journey soon.